It's the Burt Cohen Show. Hollywood sells us our dreams. The dreams go on and on and on. And we like our dreams. We like to buy our dreams. And sometimes what happens is the people who don't like, you know, people dreaming what they want to dream, get a little angry at Hollywood. We have Newt Gingrich these days, who I can't believe it, is one of the top two contenders for the Republican nomination. He hates Hollywood. Let's face it. He just despises Hollywood. We the people, you know, let's face it, we kind of love Hollywood. It's a lot of fun. And the nominations for the Academy Awards Best of the Year have just come out. And some people have said they're not so great this year, the nominations. They're kind of wimpy. But there's something else called the Progies, the Progressive Music Awards. And I'm very pleased that we will be discussing them today. Some great films you don't want to miss with Ed Rampell, author of Progressive Hollywood, A People's Film History of the United States. Ed, thanks very much for being with us again on The Burt Cohen Show.
Happy to be with you again, Burt. Greetings to everybody in New Hampshire and all of your other listeners, and a special shout out to Bethlehem, New Hampshire, where I spent my first recollections that I have of life, my summers when I was 4 and 5 years old at Hank and Hannah's bungalow colony in Bethlehem, New Hampshire.
Oh, it sounds lovely. We're going to be going out all across the nation on the Progressive Radio Network as well. And, you know, let me ask you here. I mean, we have Newt Gingrich just taking on Hollywood. How powerful is Hollywood? Why does he hate Hollywood so much? How progressive are they? And should the political right, like Newt Gingrich and those guys, should they be as afraid of Hollywood as they seem to be?
I think that those are great questions, and when I think of Newt Gingrich, I think that the best movie of 2011 vis-a-vis Gingrich would be a movie called A Dangerous Method, not only because his incendiary approaches to politics over the years has used another kind of a dangerous method, but because it's about the origins of psychoanalysis. And when you hear this guy speak, like at the South Carolina debate, when he attacked CNN's John King for his first question dealing with Gingrich's alleged personal behavior, etc. The words that Gingrich used, appalling and despicable, and everything that he spoke about, if you know anything about psychoanalysis, there's a thing called projection. And really, all those words, as an example of projection that Newt Gingrich was using, certainly applied to him. And the idea that this guy couldn't think of anything more despicable than starting a presidential debate with a question about his private life. It's like, oh, really? Like, you never heard of Auschwitz and Dachau and Hiroshima and Nagasaki and napalming innocent people in Vietnam and so on and so forth? You couldn't think of anything more despicable than that? What a self-centered narcissist. but getting back to the broader question of how progressive is Hollywood, that is a very good question. And my contention is that Hollywood may not necessarily be dominated by progressives. But there is a substantial trend, at various points in Hollywood history of progressive directors, actors, screenwriters, and other talents, cast and crew, who connect with progressive audiences, with films of consciousness and conscience. And this is sort of a fifth branch of government, so to speak, kind of a countervailing force. And I think that I recently spent an hour interviewing Oliver Stone for RockSellerMagazine.com. And what I noticed when I re-saw Platoon while I was preparing for the writing of this interview, uh-huh. is that, you know, if a handful of movies, notably Platoon, had not come out during the Reagan era, and also Stone's film Born on the 4th of July, about the wheelchair-bound Vietnam War veteran Ron Kovic.
Yes.
If those films and a few others hadn't been made and impacted so strongly on the consciousness of America, because they were, you know, award-winning, top-caliber films that had big audiences, might Reagan have not just pursued a secret war in Nicaragua and El Salvador, etc.? But if Stone hadn't made movies like Salvador, and there hadn't been a few other progressive films at that time, might there have been a more overt war? So there is this fear that movies in particular as a mass art form can influence mass audiences, a fear by the powers that be. But on the other hand, when you hear right-wingers, people like Gingrich, attacking the liberal bias of Hollywood, which, by the way, is also a big center of funding for political campaigns,
absolutely.
Usually Democrats. But when you hear this this vile and bile attacking Hollywood for being dominated by liberalism, these right-wingers always leave out a very salient fact. Oliver Stone is a good example of what I'm about to say. He's a Vietnam War veteran, but he, like Francis Ford Coppola when he made Apocalypse Now, the Pentagon would not give them any
right.
sort of assistance. Whereas if you make a pro-war, pro-imperialist movie, such as Black Hawk Down, produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who I believe never served in the military. The movie Pearl Harbor, directed by Michael Bay, who I also believe never served in the military, unlike Stone, a wounded Vietnam War veteran mm-hmm. and a decorated veteran. Mm-hmm. But if you make a pro-war film, the military rolls out the carpet for you. In providing access to their equipment, access to their military bases, actual access to military personnel to be involved in the filming for free or at low cost. And these scripts, to get that kind of subsidy from the Pentagon, these scripts are actually minutely reviewed by the Pentagon,
right.
which actually has had an office in Hollywood, in Los Angeles. They have an office to deal with the film community and the TV community. And they vet these scripts very carefully, and so that if you're anti-war, even if you're a veteran like Oliver Stone, you don't get any of that financial subsidy. But the right-wing, pro-war, pro-militarism movies, they get support up the yin-yang.
Well, there needs to be a check on the power of the central military propaganda machine, and that's one great thing about America. People talk about freedom. Well, this is what freedom is. Freedom to dissent, freedom to make art. You know, and freedom to put out things that people want to see that differ from the official party line. That's one thing that makes America So Great. Bert Cohen here. We're talking with Ed Rampell. Rampell, author of Progressive Hollywood, A People's Film History of the United States. And we're talking about why there perhaps needs to be an un-Oscar. You know, doesn't the Academy set the standard in motion picture arts and sciences well enough? What's wrong with just letting the Oscars be the sole determinants of film art? Why the progies?
Well, the Academy Award is given supposedly on the basis of artistic excellence and merit. But of course, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes politicking.
Yes.
There's a lot of demographics involved. And the Academy supposedly does not necessarily vote on the political trend of a movie. There are a lot of commercial considerations. Multi-million-dollar campaigns are waged in order to get nominations.
It's about money,
And of course, a lot of these multi-million-dollar campaigns, their budgets, let alone the budgets for the movies, the budgets for these campaigns are much bigger than the budgets of a lot of low-budget independent films.
So
we have a international group of film critics named after a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer and a film reviewer named James Agee, who used to review movies for The Nation magazine back in the day. And it's called the James Agee Cinema Circle. And the idea is to single out and honor the best progressive films and filmmakers. And the award is called the Progy Award. And the progies are not only given for on the basis of artistic excellence, but they're primarily given because of the content of a film. What is the underlying message of a film? What does it say about the human condition? What does it say about the working class, about people of color? This is the basis of the progies. What does it say about the environment and so on? So for the past 5 years, this is our fifth anniversary, we've been awarding the progies, and shortly before the Oscars came out, we announced the progy nominations. And there's some crossover with the Academy
of
films, because another thing that we like to do is to point out how some of the mainstream studio movies, it's not just independent, foreign, low-budget films that can be progressive, but some of the more big-budget movies also have, as part of the overall thrust of those films, some of them actually have progressive messages. So we try to also point that out in the progies and to shine a light on, for example, the movie called Hugo, which got the most Academy Award nominations this year. It got 11 Oscar nominations. Well, there's actually an anti-war subtext to the movie Hugo, and that's a $170 million 3D movie. That movie's budget is bigger than that of some small third world countries. No exaggeration.
I'm sure.
Shortly before the Oscars came out, we came up with our nominations, and our winners will be announced shortly before the Academy Awards ceremony is held, when the nation and to some extent the world's eyes are focused on the cinema.
Again, we are talking with Ed Rampell, knows an awful lot about Hollywood and progressive films. And just before we get into the actual nominations for the Progies, and you're right, definitely a lot of crossover between the Oscars and the Progies. But I find it interesting, some of the reviews of the Oscars and why there needs to be something in addition to the Oscars. Charlie McCollum, writing for the Mercury News, says, if you're looking for something edgy with a fresh, risky approach to storytelling, you're not going to find much in these Oscar-nominated films. Mary Elizabeth Williams, staff writer for Salon, she said, the 2011 contenders seem more like a big fuzzy blanket of sweetness and nostalgia. And, you know, it looks like the Progies do intentionally try to honor some films that take chances and challenge the audience, even if that means creating some discomfort. Well, the first category of nominations, of course, is Best Progressive Picture, which is called The Trumbo. Why is it called The Trumbo? And what are some of the films that are nominated for, in general, Best Progressive Picture?
We name every single category after either a great progressive filmmaker or a great progressive film. Dalton Trumbo was a former Communist Party member who was one of the Hollywood Ten, the blacklisted, mostly screenwriters, who in 1947 were persecuted when the Red Scare came to Hollywood full on in 1947. And Dalton Trumbo was fined, and he was sent to prison for contempt of Congress. And I must say that nowadays, with the disdain that I think up to 90% or so of the American people feel for Congress, I think 90% of America could go to jail on the same charge that Dalton Trumbo went to jail for, well, contempt of Congress.
True.
But he helped to break the Hollywood blacklist. In 1960, Otto Preminger and Kirk Douglas had the courage to give Dalton screen credit for Exodus and also for Spartacus, which Kirk Douglas starred and produced. And because his name actually appeared on the screen, he won an Academy Award under an assumed name a few years earlier, and nobody from stepped out of the audience at the Academy to collect the award as the screenwriter who had won the award, because the screenwriter didn't exist. It was a fictitious name.
Right.
But with Spartacus and Exodus, Dalton was able to use his name, and this led to the collapse of the Hollywood blacklist. So we honor him. His son, Chris Trumbo, had been one of the original members of the James Agee Cinema Circle, but unfortunately, he passed away last year.
Of the films, let's see, there's the obvious one, The Help, and I do want to talk about that, but tell us about Le Havre and The Time That Remains and A Better Life. Just a little bit briefly on each one, if you would.
The Help is a civil rights era film,
which is also nominated on the Academy Awards for Best Picture.
Correct. Le Havre is similar in a certain sense, because it's a French film. I think it's going to be released in the U.S., at least in L.A. I think it's February 3rd, so it's coming up. And Le Havre is, that's actually a city in France. It's a coastal city. I think it's around Normandy. And it's about a little African boy who, to make a long story short, is what right-wingers would call an illegal alien. And it's about how these kind of individualistic, nonconformist, members of the French working class there in Le Havre, how they try and prevent this little African child's arrest and deportation. It's a little bit of a magical realist film, and it's kind of a little bit in the tradition also of the Italian neo-realist movies of like the 1950s by people like Vittorio De Sica. And The Time That Remains is a movie about Palestinians, and I believe it takes place around 1947, 1948, when the State of Israel was created, and how this affected the Palestinians. Whereas, of course, Exodus focused on
the other
how
side,
it how it affected the Jewish people who were in the same area. This movie focuses on how this affected the Palestinians. And then the fourth nominee, there are five per category, but they have to get a certain amount of votes. And so the fourth and final nominee for the Trumbo, for Best Progressive Picture, is my personal favorite, and it's called A Better Life. And A Better Life is just an absolutely wonderful movie that is sort of a contemporary version of the Italian neorealist classic called The Bicycle Thief, which I believe was directed by De Sica. And it's been updated to contemporary Los Angeles. And it's about a hardworking father named who's portrayed by Damien Bashir. And some of our listeners may be familiar with Mr. Bashir from his role in the Showtime series called Weeds. And he was the handsome mayor or governor that Nancy, the lead marijuana selling character, was. I guess she was married to him. She certainly had a relationship and a child with him. But here in this movie, he plays an undocumented worker who works very hard, and he's a solo dad. And he's taking care of his 14 or 15-year-old son. And it's without giving away what happens, it's about their trials and tribulations. And, you know, people like Newt Gingrich should see this movie. People like this guy who mouths off about the poor and they have no work ethic and this and that, where, of course, a lot of the poor have far more of a work ethic than Hollywood, than Washington lobbyists like Gingrich, who have $500,000 credit lines at Tiffany's and so on, for their mistresses turn their wines and so on. And it's about this hardworking guy and how he tries to do the right thing. And it's a very heartwarming family story. And one of the interesting things about this movie is that it was directed by Chris White.
Don't know.
And Chris White has been involved as a producer, director, or writer with movies like The American Pie, Teen Screen Romps, and also with the Twilight Vampire series. I think he directed New Moon. It's like out of nowhere, apparently, this guy makes this great document of, although it's a feature film, it's not a documentary, but it's a chronicle of this whole issue of the undocumented worker rendered in very dramatic terms. And I went to a screening of A Better Life on Sunday at the L.A. Theater Center, right smack dab in downtown Los Angeles. And it was a large theater space. and it was people were sitting in the aisles. It was completely full, mostly with Hispanic people. And afterwards, Chris White spoke, and he this guy who made these super commercial movies like The American Pie, sex teenager movies, and the Twilight movies. This guy revealed why he made this movie, and it turns out he has a Mexican grandmother, and his family were refugees from Nazi Germany, which Whoa. Is how they came to America.
Oh, my goodness. That would be, wow. We are talking with Ed Rampell about the Progies. Some very interesting nominations for the Best Progressive Picture. The Help, obviously a very big film. I saw that. I liked it. It was sort of, something about it didn't, it seemed awfully stereotypical. It was a very good film, and it's also nominated for Best Picture. Well, let's go next to the Progie Award for Best Actor in a Progressive Picture named after John Garfield. Tell us about John Garfield and who the contenders are for Best Actor Award for the Progies.
Well, John Garfield was a huge movie star in the 1940s. I think he was the star of The Postman Always Rings Twice.
Oh, wow.
And he came out of the group theater. If I remember correctly, he originated the famous role of the boxer / violinist in Clifford Odette's Golden Boy. Although he didn't play it in the movie, he originated it on stage, if I remember correctly. And then he, like Dalton Trumbo, ran afoul of the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Good for him.
And around the time that he was being called to testify, et cetera, Garfield, who had a heart condition, I guess he had a heart attack and died from that. So in a way, you could say that HUAC murdered John Garfield.
Oh, my goodness.
He was a great actor in movies like Gentleman's Agreement about anti-Semitism and Force of Evil. And the nominees for the Garfield Progie Award for Best Actor in a Progressive Picture include Damien Bashir, who we just spoke about, who stars in A Better Life.
Uh-huh.
Peter Mullen, who's in a film called Tyrannosaur. George Clooney in The Descendants. And Viggo Mortensen as Sigmund Freud in A Dangerous Method.
And George Clooney is nominated also among the Oscars for Best Actor in The Descendants. I can't wait to see that. And I did see A Dangerous Method in a special film series here. And I have a little bit of sound. That was a very interesting film. It was there was Sigmund Freud and my guy, Carl Jung, and a young lady involved. Let's hear a little bit of sound from that movie.
Sex.
Male.
Family.
Child.
Divorce.
No.
Professor Freud.
Dr. Jung, I've simply opened the door. It's for the young men like yourself to walk through it.
She's the one for your experimental treatment.
Tell me about the first time you can remember being beaten by your father.
It excited me.
How is your little Russian patient?
There was the most dramatic improvement.
Is she a virgin?
Oh, certainly.
If you ever want to take the initiative, I live in that building there.
Why should we put so much effort into suppressing your most basic natural instincts?
I want you to punish me.
There's a rumor running around Vienna that you've taken one of your patients as a mistress.
Surely you didn't think I'd let you go without putting up a fight.
Don't you think we ought to stop?
Do you want to stop?
Very, very interesting film. And why is Viggo Mortensen, how is that progressive? I'm not quite sure in what way it fits in with the progressive theme.
I think that's a really good question. And one of the things that go into voting for the pierogies are the talents off-screen activism.
Uh-huh.
And Viggo Mortensen has been a big supporter of the anti-war movement.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure out in New England, people remember Howard Zinn well, who lived, I guess it was in Massachusetts.
Yes, Cambridge.
For much of his life. And Professor Zinn's A People's History of the United States
great book.
Was there were a lot of literary and also movie and theatrical spin-offs of it, and I saw Viggo Mortensen in downtown L.A. Read passages or famous quotations by great progressive Americans as part of a stage rendition based on A People's History of the United States. Zinn was actually there. Marisa Tomei and other top talents were there. So Viggo Mortensen, I remember seeing him at an anti-war rally. If I remember correctly, he was tossing out T-shirts to people. So he's a lot more than just Lord of the Rings. He is an actor activist with a lot of personal commitment, a great guy. And also, you know, Sigmund Freud may not have been a perfect pioneer of psychoanalysis and so on, but he did lay a foundation for a science that we're still discovering of understanding the human mind.
And liberating ourselves, yes.
And also in terms of sexual liberation,
yes,
which became a huge part of the New Left movement in the late 60s and early 70s, for example, it could be said that that Freud's work is sort of in that vein. And Vigo's depiction of Freud is very human, and the film is a very mature grown-up look at the clashes between Freud and the quote-unquote upstart, or Carl Gustav Jung,
yes,
who dared to disagree with the great master. And there's a whole Jewish versus Aryan subtext in that film. And Keira Knightley plays also a real historical figure named Sabina Spielrein. And she is just amazing,
yes,
in this film. And that character is just amazing. A mental patient who went on to become one of the original psychoanalysts. And then, I don't know if you remember, and I won't give it away because I don't believe in plot spoilers.
Good.
I won't give it away to our listeners. But do you remember the title at the end of the film that explains what happened to Sabina?
No.
It's just absolutely breathtaking and heartbreaking. I don't want to give it away, but what really happened to this woman is just astonishing.
I should see it again. And it does. I should see that movie again. I saw it back in September in a local movie festival. And I've often wondered, as kind of a big fan of Carl Jung, he influenced a lot of us old hippies in the 60s, how he got that scar in his cheek. You learn from this movie.
yes, that's true. And you know that it's directed by David Cronenberg, who is known for his kind of experimental avant-garde cinema. So it's a well-directed movie. But there are very few movies in an American industry that is dominated by the multiplex at the mall that caters towards, that largely caters to 14-year-old ticket buyers. There's a real dearth of adult drama that deals with serious themes. So I think that's why the James Agee Cinema Circle voters voted for Viggo, his off-screen activism, and also because the film deals with some really important subject matter. And remember, Jung's recurring nightmare towards the end of the film, which is all a premonition of World War I.
Oh, yes.
Powerful. And World War One, that totally unnecessary bloodbath
Absolutely.
In human history. World War One is also a recurring theme in Hugo and in The War Horse.
Ah, yes.
Very big, major films.
It's good to see the First World War, the first phase of the two wars, coming out and people looking at it for a change. I must say I'm enthused about that. A lot's being written about that, and a very, very interesting film, very good film. Well, let's move on to the Progay Award for Best Actress in a...
Before you do...
Oh, go ahead, sure. Please.
Just one sentence about George Clooney.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I recently met George Clooney at a private screening of The Ides of March.
Oh, I want
to
see that.
Got to talk to him about being named after Edward R. Murrow, who was, of course, Clooney directed the movie Good Night and Good Luck about my namesake, Edward R. Murrow. And he's really a very progressive guy. He has a very strong social conscience and mm-hmm. consciousness. And the movie The Descendants, I lived in Hawaii for about 12 years. And the thing I wanted to say about The Descendants is that Clooney's character is supposed to be part Hawaiian, and without giving away what happens in the film, without a plot spoiler, George Clooney stands up for the Hawaiians in the film.
Oh,
and that
wow.
is such an important message, to have a superstar of that caliber stand up for this oppressed, displaced, disinherited minority. So I just wanted to point.
Oh, that's good. Well, I will definitely go see that. I haven't seen it yet, but you're right. What happened to the people of Hawaii is just, you talk about despicable. That's something genuinely despicable. Bert Cohen here. We're talking about the 2012 Progy nominations with Ed Rampell about the Progressive Movie Awards. And there is the Karen Morley Award for the Best Actress. Tell us about who Karen Morley was or is, and a couple of the nominations there.
Yeah, Karen Morley is a largely forgotten actress, but she starred in the 30s in movies like Scarface, not the Al Pacino one,
right.
The Paul Muni one. I think it was directed by Howard Hawks in 1932, the great crime drama. And then she appeared in a movie about about the Depression, with unemployed people banding together to create a commune or a collective farm.
Wow.
In a 1934 King Vidor movie called Our Daily Bread, produced by Charlie Chaplin, by the way.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful movie. I just urge everybody to Netflix it or order it on Blockbuster or something. Our Daily Bread is a really great look at the last Depression, not this one, but the last one,
right.
And how people collectively formed a commune in order to survive.
Fascinating.
And Karen Morley actually ran for New York State's lieutenant governor on the American Labor Party ticket in 1954. So we remember her by naming the Progy Award for Best Actress after Karen Morley. And this year we have two nominees. One is Jessica Chastain. Last year was really Jessica Chastain's movie. She burst on the screen.
What was that?
The Tree of Life, but she's nominated here for The Debt, which is a film that deals with World War II and fascism. And the other nominee is Rooney Mara in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
And I do have a bit of sound from that, and we'll talk about it right afterwards.
She's one of the best investigators I have.
But?
She's different.
In what way?
In every way.
Something wrong with the report?
Anything you chose not to disclose.
He's clean, in my opinion. He's honest. Our credibility isn't dead yet.
Mine is.
He's had a long-standing sexual relationship with his co-editor of the magazine. Sometimes he pleasures her. Not often enough, in my opinion.
No, you're right not to include that.
I need your help. You come stay on the island. A way of avoiding all those people you might want to avoid right now.
You will be investigating thieves, misers, bullies, the most detestable collection of people that you will ever meet. My family.
There's a lot more to that. And I noticed that Rooney Mara is also nominated by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences for an Academy Award for Best Actress as well. So she's got it in both categories. That sounds like a fascinating film. What about Rooney Mara is deserving of the consideration for the Karen Morley Award?
Well, first of all, it's a really great performance, but not only that, she plays Lisbeth Salander, a very unique character, an abused woman who very militantly, shall we understate it, stands up for her rights and fights against a series of serial killers who, by the way, the Scandinavian version of the film makes it much clearer than this Hollywood version that these serial murderers are neo-Nazis. It's very clear in the Swedish version of the movie. So Rooney Mara's character is like a really, can you say kick ass on the radio? Well, I guess.
I don't know, you just did.
Yeah, but she's an unbelievable character. She's kind of in control of her own sexuality, and woe be those who violate her. She's an amazing punk character.
Yeah.
I have to say that Noomi Rapace, I'm probably mispronouncing this Swedish actress's name.
Okay.
She was also great in
the
original version of the film. And usually when Hollywood adapts a foreign film to do it with English-speaking stars, etc., they do an inferior job. But this version with Rooney Mara and also with Daniel Craig, James Bond, is also a superb film. I just don't quite understand why it needed to be made when the original was so good. But I guess they feel that people are too stupid to read subtitles. They needed to have big stars in it.
Oh, but, we like to be entertained.
Yeah. Pardon me?
We like to be entertained. Make it easy and just, facilitate that big popcorn bucket.
Well, I guess there's something to it. But nevertheless, even though the original was great, so is the English-speaking version. Rooney Mara is excellent. And she gets my vote.
Ah, interesting. Well, I look forward to seeing that. Well, tell us about Best Anti-War Film. That for sure is not a category at the Oscars. Tell us about the Renoir and what films are nominated for Best Anti-War Film.
Well, Jean Renoir, of course, was the French filmmaker who made one of the greatest anti-war movies of all time called The Grand Illusion.
Wonderful.
In 1937.
Amazing. Yes.
And the two nominees for the Progy for the Renoir are Steven Spielberg's War Horse and Angelina Jolie's hard-hitting film about former Yugoslavia's wars called In the Land of Blood and Honey. And War Horse is, without giving a plot spoiler, here's the plot for War Horse. Boy meets horse. Boy loses horse. World War One. Boy finds horse. That's the plot. And I have to say, the first 45 minutes or so of the film by Spielberg are so overblown and so long, so old fashion. It's just like a complete snore, in my opinion. And it could have been condensed, the 45 minutes, easily into 10 minutes.
Oh, my.
Easily into 15 minutes. However, once Spielberg goes to war, the film really comes alive. And it's like Saving Private Ryan in the sense that it's not a glorification of war, mm-hmm. but a film that really shows, as General Sherman pithily put it, war is hell.
Yeah.
And World War I, certainly one of the two most hellish wars in human history. And, you know, that's a social message that I never get tired of hearing.
Yeah, it needs to be said over and over again. It's hard to believe that here we are in 2012 and still doing it. So interesting.
And it's just incredible, that verdict in the Haditha massacres, 24 civilians killed, and I believe the only Marine sentence gets 3 months. Holy Lieutenant Callie.
Wow. See, you know, somehow that news gets glossed over, and that's one reason we need independent artists, filmmakers, and the like to focus on things that, you know, the mainstream media looks over. And that's, you know, we need a check on the, you know, huge propaganda machine that would have us direct our vision only one way. We need to be able to look at other things, and we owe a great, great debt of gratitude to the artists who do have courage. And that's what the Progies are about. We're talking about the Progressive Film Nominations for 2012. And there's something called the Best Progressive Foreign Film. I could never figure out how in Hollywood there's the best foreign language film. How can they make one category of all, you know, all the rest of the world's films? I don't understand that. But this is Best Progressive Foreign Film. Tell us about that. I probably would pronounce it wrong.
Well, it's called the Guillo,
Guillo,
and it's named after Guillo Pontecorvo, and Guillo Pontecorvo made that classic of what we would now call it the Arab Spring, but around 1966, he made an immortal masterpiece called The Battle of Algiers.
Incredible.
And it's like you're watching a documentary.
It does
about
seem like
liberation struggle against the French in Algeria.
Yes.
But it's all actors. It's all fiction. It's all reproduced, even though it has the ring of truth in every frame of the film. And it's action-packed. It's really exciting. And so on, and there's a great scene, by the way, based on actual figures, where the French officer who is in charge of torturing the Algerian suspects of the National Liberation Front gives a news conference, and he basically spells it out, and he says, "Listen, do you want to win this war? If we're going to win this war, we've got to use torture. If you don't want to win this war, then we won't use torture." So words to that effect. And it's just, even though that there's no bombs exploding in that scene, there are verbal explosions. And this is a really great movie. And he also, Guillo Pontecorvo, also directed a movie that Marlon Brando said he thought was the best movie he ever starred in.
Hmm.
And it wasn't Streetcar Named Desire, and it wasn't On the Waterfront. It was a movie called Burn, about a third world national liberation struggle in a Caribbean island.
Oh, wow.
A great black power movie from 1969. So the nominees for the GIO, the Progi for Best Progressive Foreign Film, go to Le Havre, which is the French film we spoke about that deals with the immigration issue.
Mm-hmm.
The Time That Remains, I think that's also a French film,
yes,
by the way, and that deals with the Palestinians, and an Iranian film called A Separation,
which is also on the official Oscar list of Best Foreign Film. We don't have a lot of time left. There's, I want to make sure we get to one thing that The Robeson, named, of course, after Paul Robeson, Best Portrayal of People of Color, I do have a bit of sound from that, but tell us about the Robeson and what that is and what the nominees are, who the nominees are this year.
Well, Paul Robeson, of course, was a great African-American crusader for the rights of not only black people, but for all people. He was associated with the Popular Front and the Communist Party, although there is a dispute whether or not Robeson actually was a party member. He was blacklisted during the 50s. He was really a Renaissance man. He went to Rutgers. I think he had a law degree that he trained as a lawyer, but he had a great singing voice.
Tremendous.
He was a good actor, and he was in movies such as 1936's Song of Freedom and 1940's The Proud Valley, and he narrated a sort of a docudrama about American homegrown fascism in 1942 that was called Native Land.
Mm.
He was certainly one of the greatest Americans of all time, and he was kind of the Muhammad Ali of his day, not that he was a boxer, but in the sense that Muhammad Ali said, "No Viet Cong ever called me N-word,"
right,
and wouldn't serve in the Vietnam War. And Paul Robeson got into a lot of trouble in the late 40s for saying that African-Americans had no reason to go fight the Soviet Union. And so the nominees for the Robeson for Best Portrayal of People of Color goes to The Help.
Yes.
Le Havre.
As mentioned, yeah.
London River, which is a very interesting film, directed, it takes place in England, but it's directed by an Algerian, actually the descendant of Algerians who was born in France, and it's about the aftermath of the terrorist bombings on the buses and subways or the underground in London a few years ago.
Right.
Muslim,
uh-huh,
which is about prejudice against people of the Islamic faith in
mm-hmm
America.
Mm-hmm.
Co-starring Danny Glover. And Danny Glover also produced Black Power Mixtape, 1967 to 1975. And that is an incredible documentary, also nominated for the Progie for Best Progressive Documentary, by the way. And Black Power Mixtape is one day, a couple of years ago, a Swedish filmmaker stumbled upon this huge archive that had just been stashed away in a Swedish TV studio of Swedish camera crews, news crews, interviewing the great leaders of the American Civil Rights Movement and the Black Power Movement.
Yeah.
And so this filmmaker edited it all together, and Danny Clever produced it.
Hmm.
And the Black Power Mixtape has these great interviews with Angela Davis
while she's in prison,
yeah, Stokely Carmichael, Bobby Seale of the Black Panther Party, and it's just an amazing film. And I really prefer movies like this to films like The Help, because in movies like Mississippi Burning or To Kill a Mockingbird, it's the white liberal who is the protagonist. Movies like Biko about South Africa, it's not Denzel Washington who's the protagonist, it's Kevin Kline as the white liberal who tries to help him. And I'm all for white progressives being against racism and so on, but the real stars of the real protagonists,
right,
of the civil rights movement weren't white FBI agents like in the movie Mississippi Burning, but it was the black people themselves.
Absolutely. And before we get to this, I definitely want to see Black Power Mixtape 1967 to 75. There's one more film in the best portrayal of people of color, Pariah. What's that?
Pariah, yes, that's right. And I believe that's an African film, and it also has a lesbian theme, I believe.
Ah, two hits. Well, let's hear a little bit. This movie looks fascinating, I have to say. Black Power Mixtape, 1967 to 1975.
When someone asks me about violence, I just find it incredible, because what it means is that the person who's asking that question has absolutely no idea what black people have gone through, what black people have experienced in this country.
In the 1960s and 70s, Swedish filmmakers arrived in America to explore the Black Power movement, which the U.S. media saw as a violent threat.
We're making a revolution by educating the people to the fact that they should arm themselves for self-defense.
If any racist dog policemen attack us, we will defend ourselves because we are bent on surviving.
30 years later, in the cellar of a Swedish television station, an amazing collection of unseen interviews was discovered with some of the greatest revolutionary minds in modern history.
There wouldn't be an America if it wasn't for black people. We hold America to our bosom.
When you get tired enough, it's when you want to sacrifice everything.
Get ridiculed and discriminated and be less than a man.
It's a question of dignity and decency.
My husband didn't make enough money because he was Negro.
We were moved and motivated and charged up by people who had already made a commitment to bring about change.
Fight for liberation! Oh, yeah!
Dr. King is a great man, and he's very patient. Unfortunately, I am from a younger generation. I am not as patient, nor am I as merciful.
Black is beautiful, but black isn't power. Knowledge is power.
In this bankrupt country, there is a point where caution ends and cowardice begins.
Community was flooded with drugs. Hoover and the FBI, they made sure that the drugs were an influence.
Anybody can die nobly for a cause. The sign of maturity is to live day by day for that cause.
We have to document our history. If we're going to tell the story, let's tell the story right.
The Black Power Mixtape, 1967 to 1975, featuring Erykah Badu, Harry Belafonte, Stokely Carmichael, Eldridge Cleaver, Kathleen Cleaver, Angela Davis, Talib Kweli, Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale, and Amir Questlove Thompson.
Well, I can't wait to see that film. That sounds really, really powerful. Well, just we'll have to zip through the rest of them. I noticed that Hugo and The Artist are among the nominees for most slyly subversive satirical cinematic film. That's a great title, named after Louis Buñuel. That sounds really fun, too. I got to see all those. Well, how can people, you know, we can't go through them all here. There must be a place on the wonderful internet, Ed, where people can go to find out more about the Progies.
Go to the Progressive Magazine online, or the Hollywood Progressive. You could see hollywoodprogressive.com, Jester Entertainment, and you could see the entire listing of our nominees. And I do want to say I don't have any commercial interest with Netflix or with Blockbuster, but you can get DVDs of a lot of the films through Netflix or Blockbuster, and I don't get any money from them. I'm just saying that if you're not in a major urban area but would like to see some of those films, that's one way to do so. There's more in the cinema than what's playing at the local multiplex, and it's up to viewers to be vigilant and to go out there and seek out the movies of conscience and consciousness and to support them, and in the process you'll culturally enrich yourself.
Ed Rampell, thank you so much, and if people are interested, you can email me and I'll tell you what's on the list. Bert, B-U-R-T, at bertcohen.com. Ed Rampell, thanks so much. Some great, great films. I look forward to seeing them. Thank you so much for being with us on The Bert Cohen Show.
Thanks, Bert.
All right.
So weak and fragile. That's why she tried to be so hard. But they turned her into a princess. And they sat her on a throne. But she turned her back on stardom. because she wanted to be alone. You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you've hardly even heard of. People who worked and suffered and struggled for fame. Some who succeeded and some who suffered in vain.